So the question is, for some people, why is sharing information a problem among editors? I know in our group we had somebody who was basically the publisher of like 26 journals. And so that may not be as much of an issue as sharing between two different or three different publishing houses and a couple of institutions. Somehow, if it's a little more contained within one institution, it may be a little bit easier to handle. But the idea is that manuscripts under review are treated confidentially. And there is somewhat of a legal risk of defamation, especially if you don't stick to the facts, especially if you call someone a plagiarizer or you accuse them of unethical behavior, rather than saying something like a question was raised about where the data came from, or a question was raised whether informed consent was really obtained in these cases and what that informed consent constituted. So treating the issue as a statement of a problem rather than saying author X over here has been making up data for years. So you have to be careful of things like that. It's also not clear who should be involved, and we have talked about that in a number of cases today. Institutions sometimes need to be involved, publishers, other journal editors, and where, if it's an international submission, how do you contact somebody in another country when you can't read Pashtun or you can't read Arabic or you just don't know from the website of the institution or the journal who you should be contacting and who you might be dealing with. But what are the advantages of all of this? I think it's clear that the advantages far outweigh the risks, and somebody mentioned this earlier when we were talking about the Authenticate. If there are multiple near simultaneous submissions to diverse journals, Authenticate's not going to pick that up. Your reviewers are going to pick that up, saying, I was asked to review this by another journal, and it's very similar to this one. And that kind of raises the red flag, and then the editors need to take it from there. It does enhance the speed of unraveling the problem. You can get to the bottom faster, I think, if you share if you're sharing information. And many reviewers, of course, review for multiple journals in their fields, and some people are highly specialized reviewers and have seen previous submissions or know the institution where the author was from. If you have an open or a single blind review, if you have a double blind review, it's a little different. They may not know. And then the one thing that was really apparent in some of the big cases is that when several editors got together and approached an institution, it was much stronger coming from two or three editors of big journals to say, look, you have an author there at your institution who has submitted papers to these three journals, and these are the problems that we've encountered, and we really need you to investigate this. So that was the one of the things that was a big strength in the sharing of information. So this was the case, one of the more recent cases. Another one of those anesthesiologists, like I said, I don't know what they're inhaling over there in anesthesia, but there seem to be some issues. Yoshitaka Fujii was a very prolific author for over two decades. He conducted 169 randomized clinical trials in 12 years and published those results. He worked at multiple universities and hospitals in Japan, and he published in more than 23 journals. He was in anesthesia. And so there are several anesthesia journals, but he also published in journals like pain management journals, and anesthesia has somewhat of a broader scope than some, you know, like nanotechnology. There's probably not that many journals that publish nanotechnology papers. So there may be about 200 papers of Fujii's that end up being retracted. Most of them have been retracted now, but there's still an investigation going on. And this really required complex multi-journal cooperation, And this was the case where Steve Schaefer, who was the editor of one of them, Don Miller, and I can't remember who the third person was, but they actually elaborated in a very long, detailed letter the studies, where they were published, the numbers of patients, the discrepancies in the data, and the reason why the editors were calling these papers into question. And they sent that to the institutions where Dr. Fujii had worked. And as a journal editor, you don't have the resources to conduct that kind of an analysis or an investigation, especially if your journal's in the US or Canada or the UK, and this author is working in Japan. You've got to rely on the institutions. These were the problems that they were noted in Fujii's papers. The variability of reported data was suspicious. So there had been an analysis by a statistician that was actually published in one of the anesthesia journals that said, you know, people have a tendency when they fake data to use round numbers, whole numbers. And there's an analysis that several people have figured out how to analyze and say, you know, the probability of this really being real, random data is minuscule in this case. So there was overwhelming evidence of fabrication, and when he was contacted, Fujii said, oh, well, I've moved from the institution and I have no access to the raw data any longer, or the raw data have been lost, they were eaten by the dog, they were whatever. There was no record of the raw data. There was actually no record of research oversight and approval, even though that was required. And, you know, it's easy to make a statement, and IRB approval was obtained and informed consent was obtained from all subjects, when in fact there was actually no research oversight in any of his studies. I think the institutions were actually trying to do the right thing in this case, and I heard some horror stories from people that where the institutions are not responding, they're not interested in doing the right thing. They sort of gather around the author to protect the author and their institutional reputation. So you're not always going to get a magnificent outcome just because you share data. But you probably have more of a chance, especially when it's the scope of this kind of misconduct. So then we had the final version of the paper posted on the website. Steve Yentis was another one of the anesthesia journal editors, I think. But this is the way the discussion documents end up. And the guidance in this discussion document really talks about sharing data, but sharing it carefully. Making sure that you're careful about the way you say things, that you share with as few people as possible, but enough people to get the problem solved. And the sort of the underlying principle is you do what you need to do, but minimize the harm that could potentially result if indeed there had been no data fabrication or misconduct occurring. And that is an issue. People are reluctant to share data because they're worried that they might be sued. And we've heard a couple of cases of that where authors have threatened saying, you know, I'm going to sue you or whatever. We did this presentation at the CSE meeting earlier this year, and Steve Schaefer, who was the one of the editors involved in this whole case, and a lawyer were on the panel with me. And the things that I learned from participating in these discussions are basically summarized in these key points, that don't do it lightly. Don't share information lightly. Share it when it's necessary, and be judicious in what you're sharing. We all use email to do this, and that was a big question raised, and there was a lot of discussion on the COPE website about this. Should you put this in email? Because maybe Google can be reading, maybe Google is reading your email. Well, we know Google is reading your email. There's no doubt about that. Google is reading your email. And is that, are they really interested in what you're saying there? Or, you know, is this just a, you know, sort of a philosophical concern that we have? But email is really appropriate and practical to deal with this. You may put confidential, you may put it as a confidential attachment. You may put an addendum on the bottom saying this material is confidential, do not share. You can't control it once it's gone out of your email box, but you can do what you can to minimize the spread of this information that to parties where it is not necessary. So you can limit the content and the circulation list to the absolute minimum required. And it should be factual only. And the thing that I learned from the lawyer that was so important is be consistent in your process. You absolutely, if you share information on one case and it's possibly appropriate to share information in another case, you need to follow through and be consistent in that process. Don't share information about one case because you don't like the guy, and in another case, keep it all confidential because, you know, this person's a good guy or whatever. But that's where you get into legal troubles, because the lawyer said, lawyers, when they're doing discovery, what they're looking for when they're going through all your paperwork, they're looking for inconsistencies in your process, your paper trail. When they find an inconsistency, that's what they hang their legal case on. So if you are consistent in your approach to these problems, you don't really have anything to worry about. He also pointed out that some people have tried to bring lawsuits against editors and against publishers, either looking for data or trying to say you've defamed me and my career is ruined, and they have not gotten anywhere. Somebody asked the question, what about the legal, what kind of legal standing does COPE have? COPE's not a court of law. It is not a something that is recognized in all countries. Some countries will say, well, we don't care what COPE says, we do things our way. And you know, that may be the case. But the court of public opinion is in our favor. That what we're trying to do really is not punish authors, not punish institutions. We're trying to maintain the scientific record and maintain the integrity of the scientific record. And as long as that's pretty clear and you're doing this consistently, I don't think you're gonna have any difficult, it doesn't mean you're not gonna have sleepless nights. It doesn't mean that people aren't gonna threaten you. It doesn't mean you're not gonna get letters from Claire Francis. It just means that you have to ignore some of those things and you have to be consistent, you have to be transparent in your processes, and authors really are not gonna be able to, they're not gonna have any kind of case against you.